Hello and welcome to Virago Voices Podcast. This is episode 5 of Virago Health. This podcast is all about women's empowerment, and Virago Health is a means of empowering women to take control of their own health by providing them with the knowledge they require to do so. If you're just joining us for this podcast, my name is Victoria and I'm a junior doctor. This is the 5th and final episode of my 5-part series on contraception. I definitely advise listening to episode 1, which covers what contraception is. It's only 9 minutes long, before listening to this podcast, as the terms, etc. will all make more sense. And listen to the others too, if you'd like. I've also posted some helpful label diagrams on Virago Voices Instagram page at Virago_voices. So remember to refer to these if you need any help with any of the terms used in the podcast. Or just drop me a DM. Last week, I was chatting about the pills, the different types, how they act, and the pros and the cons. Again, the feedback I got from last week's episode was overwhelmingly positive, with Victoria from Worcester commenting that the podcasts so far have been really informative, helping her make informed decisions about her contraceptive choices. And Julia in Aberdeen, who has learned so much from each episode. Gemma in Brighton commented how interesting and useful the last 4 episodes have been. Thank you so much for all of your feedback, and I love hearing from my listeners. Feel free to send me a DM with any questions or queries or any comments that you might have, and I'll be happy to answer them or share them in next week's episode. This episode is going to be everything else. I've called it other methods because I didn't really know how to express in the title what we were going to cover, and I didn't want an extremely long title. I'll be discussing barrier methods, permanent methods, and now famous thanks to Bridgerton, the pull-out method. I'll also mention the ring and the patch as contraceptive choices, so hopefully I'll cover all contraceptive options. And as always, I'll discuss what they are, how they work, and the pros and cons. And I just want to comment on how crazy this week's been. I mean, we've had snow, we've had the first ever female vice president of the US, and just been an amazing week, so just wanted to throw that in there. Anyway, first up, barrier methods. So, when I say barrier methods, I'm talking about condoms and femidoms, anything that stops sperm reaching the cervix. On the note of the cervix, I saw this week the cervix described by Uteropedia, so shout out to them on Instagram. They described the cervix as the bouncer of the VIP uterus club, which I love it as a descriptor. It's essentially the bouncer that stands at the gate of the womb, allowing things in, like sperm, and allowing things out, like babies. So I thought this was quite helpful and might help you to understand the cervix a little bit better. Anyway, I digress again. So this next sentence I feel like I need to shout. Barrier methods are the only method that protects against STIs and HIV. Okay, so as long as that's clear. First up, we're going to cover male barrier methods, which are basically limited to condoms, which are called external barrier methods. Condoms cover the penis like a giant sock, stopping sperm from even entering the vagina. And I stress, this is only if used correctly. Equally, it stops vaginal fluid getting to the penis, so stops, as I said, the spread of STIs and HIV. Condoms come in all different shapes and sizes. As we know, all penises are unique and come in different varieties. You can get ribbed, you can get glow-in-the-dark, you can get flavoured. Have a play, experiment. They're 98% effective if used perfectly. However, if they're not used properly, they do have a 21% failure rate. That is, 21 in 100 women will get pregnant. So now I'll discuss how to wear a condom properly, so buckle up. Firstly, condoms must be applied when the penis comes in contact with the genital area. That's really important. They have to be applied when the penis is erect, which people don't really know. And you must ensure that the condom is in date, not these manky ones that have been lying in a guy's wallet for ages, and hasn't been damaged when the packaging has been opened. So try not to open it with your teeth or your long nails. When applying the condom, ensure that it's the right way up, i.e. apply it to the tip of the penis and be able to roll the sides down. If you put it on the wrong way, you must discard the condom as the tip has already come in contact with the tip of the penis, and then that tip will go into the vagina or other orifice and can still spread infection and potentially some cum with sperm in it. Ensure you only use one condom per episode of sex, i.e. don't double up on condoms, i.e. put two, one over the other, because that makes them more likely to break, and ensure you change the condom after each ejaculation. Condoms must be taken off post-ejaculation before the penis goes soft and disposed of in a bin and not down the toilet, as apparently it blocks the sewers. Okay, so reasons to not wear a condom. If you have a latex allergy, obviously you can get non-latex ones, but apparently they're a bit more expensive. And in the cases of erectile dysfunction, as you need the penis to be erect to apply it. Condoms can be useful, however, in cases of premature ejaculation, as it dulls the sensation slightly. I'll talk about the pros and cons after I've discussed the femidom, because they're essentially similar in their mechanism. So femidoms then. Femidoms sit in the vagina, and they're essentially internal condoms. So they stop the penis from touching the inside of the vagina and again stop sperm from reaching and entering the cervix. Femidoms are 95% effective versus condoms, which are 98%. They're described as internal barrier methods, as I said. They have an inner ring that sits at the cervix, then a tunnel that sits in the vaginal cavity, then an outer ring which covers the external genitalia, therefore preventing the spread of STIs. They can also be used in the anal canal for anal sex, and lube is advised in these circumstances, as without lube is more of a chance of the femidom breaking. Femidoms can stay in place for 2 to 3 hours, but again, remember to remove them once ejaculation has occurred and replace after each episode of sex. And the rules for the condoms apply to the femidoms, you know, ensure they're in date, ensure they're not damaged, etc., etc. So the pros and cons of these methods. So the pros are that there's no hormones involved, which is good if hormones can't be tolerated. They also protect against the transmission of STIs and HIV. They're only required when sex occurs, and they have no effect on fertility. They also don't require an appointment with a healthcare professional, and because you can just buy them over the counter, and they can be used as backup contraceptive when you're using other methods, for example, when you're waiting for your IUD and the coil or your implant to start working, you can use condoms or femidoms in the interim. The cons are that they're not as effective as other methods like the implant and coil at preventing pregnancy. And their efficacy relies on perfect use, so there's a lot of user error can be involved. They also require the cooperation of both partners, and they can be thought to interrupt spontaneous sexual activity. However, I raise an eyebrow at that one. But anyway, moving on. Female reproductive system has also got some other forms of contraception that can be used. So you've got the diaphragm and the cervical caps, which you may or may not know about. The diaphragm is a slightly wider oval shape device, and the cap is a circle, and they both work by covering the cervix. This method, however, does not protect against HIV and STIs, as they don't cover the whole vaginal canal, just the cervix. And for these methods to work, you have to use a spermicide as well, and you have to put this on the device prior to insertion. Most of these devices require a fitting by a healthcare professional. However, you can get the Kaya brand, C-A-Y-A, over the counter, which is designed to fit 80% of cervixes. However, I'd still advise, even if you have that method, to go and get it checked by your healthcare professional to ensure that the device covers the cervix fully or it won't work. Diaphragms and caps are not recommended if you've had previous toxic shock syndrome, or if you get recurrent urinary tract infections, or if you're HIV positive, as the spermicide can react with the cervix and can increase the likelihood of getting a genital lesion, which can increase HIV transmission and also HIV acquisition. They're also not recommended if you have cervical cancer, uterine prolapse, or if you're allergic to the spermicide, because you need the spermicide for each of the methods. So to insert the diaphragm or cap, this will be taught to you by a healthcare professional, but ensure before you put it in, you wash your hands, check for damage of the device, and apply the spermicide. Then squeeze in the device and ensure that the cervix is fully covered. An important point that will be stressed to you by your healthcare professional is that you leave the device in situ for a minimum of 6 hours post intercourse. And if further intercourse occurs, you reapply the spermicide without removing the device. The maximum time for the device to be in situ depends on the material of the device. If it's latex, it can be in for a maximum of 30 hours. And if it's silicone, it can be in for a max of 48 hours. But ensure you leave it in for 6 hours minimum post intercourse to ensure that, you know, sperm doesn't sneak in. Once the device is removed, you should wash it in warm, soapy water and dry it well, then place it back in its little case that it comes in. The device should be replaced every 2 years or when the device becomes damaged. Again, the pros and cons are similar to the above with barrier methods. However, a con would be that you need to use spermicide and it's not always that well tolerated. I also stress that if you have a fitted diaphragm or cap, you should get them refitted once you've had a baby, because the size and shape of your cervix can change. And again, these methods do not protect against sexually transmitted infections. So, moving on, we're now on permanent methods. I'm not going to talk too much about these, as they really require a good chat with your GP or healthcare professional, because they're irreversible, and therefore the reasons for having them must be well thought out. For women, the process is interfering with the fallopian tubes, which are the tubes that connect the ovaries, which make eggs, to the womb. So interfering with fallopian tubes mean that you prevent the passage of egg from the ovary into the womb, and also prevent the passage of sperm from the womb to the egg. Most fertilisation of an egg occurs within the fallopian tube, so obstructing this means that hopefully fertilisation won't happen. This operation has no impact on female hormones, therefore you'll still get period each month and you'll still make eggs each month. So if you suffer from kind of mid-cycle pain, you'll still get that regardless. And also 2 to 5 women out of 1,000 women who get the procedure will still get pregnant despite the procedure. The procedure itself is carried out under general anaesthetic, which means you get put to sleep, and it's done via keyhole surgery, just similar to when you get your appendix out, and which then in itself takes a recovery period of several days and carries the risk of any operation. For men, the process is interfering with the tube that carries sperm from the testes, where they're made, to the seminal vesicle, where sperm mixes with semen to form ejaculate, which is cum. The process blocks the sperm from getting to the ejaculate, and therefore all the sperm just stays in the testes, and any further ejaculate or cum post-op is aspermatic, as in it doesn't have any sperm in it. It should be noted that this procedure does not cause men to be impotent and it does not affect their libido. Men will still come, it just won't contain any sperm. And 1 in 2,000 couples will still get pregnant despite this procedure. The procedure is carried out under local anaesthetic, so you won't be put to sleep, and it lasts about 15 minutes, so less of a recovery period is required. Again, the procedure carries with it its own risks. And again, these will all be explained to you by your healthcare provider when you go to see them and get counselling with them on the issues and the kind of pros and cons. The pros are that it's non-hormonal and good for couples who have completed their families. However, it is irreversible and people can regret it. And you can also get some post-op complications as they are surgical procedures. With permanent methods, there's no guarantee that these methods can be reversed. So if couples do regret the decisions that they made, you know, firstly, the NHS doesn't pay for the procedure to be reversed. And so you'd have to go private, which is expensive, and there's no guarantee. So it does require a long discussion with your GP or healthcare provider, and I'd urge you to do that if you're considering this method. And next, this is a method I wasn't going to talk about. Like everyone else in the world, I have binge-watched Bridgerton. So I feel like I must speak about it, and that's the pull-out method. If you haven't watched the show, the two main characters use the pull-out method as a form of contraception, which worked for them. The pull-out method essentially is when, you know, the pull-out method is where the penis is pulled out prior to ejaculation or climax. So if you haven't watched Bridgerton, that's, you're filled in. This, for obvious reasons, has a very high failure rate, as firstly, it takes a lot of self-control, experience and trust to be carried out effectively in a partnership. Also, it's not always necessarily at climax when sperm are released. Plus, pre-cum, which is the cum that kind of comes, excuse the pun, it's the cum that kind of comes out when the penis starts to get hard. It can also contain sperm that was kind of lingering in the urethra, particularly if the man has ejaculated not long before he gets hard again. So, it's basically essentially less fun with a high failure rate, despite what Bridgerton would lead us to believe. Okay, I did say this episode was a bit all over the show. So we've done barrier methods, we've done permanent methods, we've done the pull-out method. Lastly, we're going to cover the ring and the patch, which is something I really should have covered in the pill episode, because they're similar to the combined pill. However, I thought there was enough going on in the pill episode, so I've left them to this one. So the ring and the patch are both methods that contain estrogen and progesterone. So they're similar to the oral contraceptive pill in their risks and their pros and cons. So the patch, firstly, is a three-layered kind of plaster type thing, with estrogen and progesterone in the middle layer. And yeah, it comes like a plaster, and you apply it to your tummy, your bum, your torso and your upper arm. You apply it weekly, and it must be on the same day each week for 3 whole weeks, with then a 1 week break, which is similar to your hormone free week when you're on the pill. Then the ring is a flexible soft ring which contains estrogen and progesterone, which is then placed in the vagina and releases daily hormone. This is kept in the vagina for 3 weeks and then is removed for 7 days before then you reinsert a new one for 3 weeks. So again, these methods are similar pros and cons to the oral contraceptive pill, as they contain the same hormone. However, they don't require you to remember to take a pill daily, but they're not as long term as, say, the implant or the IUD, the coil. So that was a bit of a whistle-stop tour of all the rest of the contraceptive options that are out there. If you've got any questions on anything that this episode has covered, please drop me a DM on Instagram or tag us in your stories. I'll endeavour to answer any questions you have in the next episode. if you've got any topics that you want me to cover in future episodes, please let me know. You know, there's other things that we could cover, like fertility awareness and things like that. So if you want me to do that, just let me know. This is our last episode in our contraceptive series, and next week we'll be moving on to a new series, which I'll be posting very soon about. So stay tuned. It's super exciting. I've already recorded a lot of the podcast for it. So I'm very excited for that. In the meantime, if you like this episode, please let me know and share it with your friends. And subscribe to Virago Voices on Spotify or Apple Music. Thank you for listening and have a lovely week.